Good morning. Good morning. It is the Friday, November 7th. It's not the last Friday of the month, but the sheriff had an alternative schedule last month, so we couldn't do that appointment. So it's all right. He made it up. He's here with us today. Sheriff Paul Haru. Good morning, Mr. Sheriff. How you doing, my friend?
Chris, it's good to be back on with you. It's always good to be on with you.
Well, you missed Halloween with me, though.
Yeah, you know,
Are you out trick-or-treating? Is that why you couldn't make it last Friday?
No, but I was handing out candy, and, you know, it's not like it was when we were kids. I'm 49. You're probably a few years older than me. But when we were kids, you know, a lot more people, kids, they would trick-or-treat. This time, I had two kids who were probably 10 or 11 years old, and then I also had, you know, one group of teenagers come by, about seven or eight of them, and that was it. And
really?
I live on a main road.
What do we make of that?
I heard there were more Halloween parties, but I also heard something about how the weather was really windy that day. Okay. That might have been a reason.
What about the fact that kids just are wimpy now and they don't go out trick-or-treating? It's not like the good old days, Sheriff, when you and I were out there going door-to-door, getting bags of candy, throwing eggs, maybe ringing doorbells and running away, stealing pumpkins. That's all gone now.
Yeah, it's just not the way. It's just not the same. Well, it's just not the same as it used to be, so... I mean, heck, if you throw an egg now, you can end up in Department of Youth Services. You
know, right?
With a criminal record.
You've had an Academy of Graduation. It's actually coming up just 10 days away. 10 days and a wake up, guys. 29 in the Academy right now.
Yeah. This is going to be our last Academy of the calendar year. And then next year, we're starting with three academies as opposed to two. So we're typically able to recruit about 60 people per year. And we do two classes of 30. So going forward, we're probably going to have three classes of 20. So it's, you know, and when I start reporting, oh, we have 20 people in a class, 20 people, it's not that we're doing worse all of a sudden. It's that we're, you know, it's still 60 people in the course of a year, roughly 60 in the course of a year, but it's going to be spread out over three. It just puts people online a lot faster.
If someone's looking to work at the corrections at the Bristol County House of Correction, the next academy is now accepting applications.
Yes.
How does someone apply? Do they go to the online, I would assume,
yeah,
right?
Go to our website. There's an employment tab at the top of our website. Make sure you click on Bristol County Sheriffs. When you do Google search, don't go to Barnstable County.
Right.
You know, just I want the people.
Right. You don't want to work for Sheriff Buckley. You want to work for Sheriff Haru.
Yeah, we want you at our jail.
Let's not bury the lead here. I've been waiting on this story for a while.
Yeah.
You and I have talked
and
about
Chris,
this.
Chris, you know what? I'm giving this to you first. Seriously, we're doing the press release on Monday morning, but I'm giving it to you because you were cool about how you handled that before.
Ginger Hook.
Yes.
Tell us about former employee Ginger Hook. She was indicted.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So Ginger Hook was our librarian.
Cool name.
Yeah. She is alleged to have brought in $65,000 worth of K2, which is synthetic marijuana. Mm-hmm. Marijuana is not illegal in Massachusetts under state law, but it is still a contraband inside the jail.
Okay.
And this was 13 pages of K2. And she is alleged to have been bringing that in. You know, she was caught bringing it in, but, you know, we have to, you know, always... you know, say alleged because maybe there was some mitigating factor. I have to just, you know, be fair. You know,
sure,
she's presumed innocent until, you know, convicted in a court. But on the street, a sheet of K2 goes for roughly $50.
So explain what K2 is, because I've never seen it. I don't know about it.
Yep.
I know what marijuana is. That's a green leafy substance.
Yes.
So if you're lucky. But what is K2?
Yeah. So it's a synthetic marijuana, and... like a piece of paper, like an 8.5 by 11, like you have right there on the street, that goes for about $50. In the jail, goes for about $5,000 now. When I started at the jail, it was going for about $2,000. So the efforts we've been making and the strides we've been making to reduce the amount of contraband is, you know, resulting in higher drug prices because the supply is getting less, you know, so that's what that would suggest, or
right.
It's possible also the demand is going up. I have to be fair, that is possible.
Sure.
But, you know, we'd like to think that the supply is getting tighter and tighter.
And they smoke it? Is that how they ingest it?
Okay. Yeah, exactly. So there's different ways you can take it, but the, what it is like, it's like a marijuana leaf. You, would, you know, you smoke it and it's just like, it's a leaf, you know, you shred it up and you dry it out. With K2, though, you soak a piece of paper in it because it's a liquid.
Okay.
And it's kind of like the concentrate of it. And so it's, that's something that they break up into little pieces of paper and then they, you know, consume it. You know, smoking is one way to do it. And so, but that.
Can you like put it on your tongue like LSD?
I don't know if you can do it like that. Okay. You know, I've heard there's multiple ways. Smoking is one of them. I don't know the other. I don't do it myself. So,
right.
But you know, I there's other ways you can take it, as I understand.
Maybe next month we'll get K2 and we'll see. Let's get nuts, Sheriff. We'll take it an hour before the program.
You can take it. I'm not going to take it. It's not illegal. It's right? not, you know, but it's.
That doesn't bother me anyway.
Yeah. It's you know, our you know, with marijuana, I will say on the side, you know, if I can digress for a moment, our jail is filled with people who are. We have people in jail who are arrested for drinking and driving or domestic violence and under the influence of alcohol. What you don't have is people arrested for like domestic violence with marijuana or domestic smoking and like driving, even though that's still under the influence, but it's a lot less like frequent. So point is marijuana, like just objectively speaking, is less serious than alcohol on the outside. But on the inside of a jail, it's still a real problem to have a lot of drugs and contraband. It's a problem at every jail in the country. Every jail or prison has a problem with drugs and contraband. But in this particular case, you know, she was caught bringing in 13 pages, you know, and so we wanted to, you know, say, okay, how are we going to handle this? Are we going to, just like terminate her, or are we going to just give her a warning or something? We said, no, let's go for the prosecution, because I've been told under my predecessor, when a situation like this happened, it wasn't made public. Okay. I want to make all of these public. We have multiple investigations going on right now. We want, like, when somebody gets caught, like an employee or an inmate coming in or somebody, I want to make that public, because I want to let people know, if you mess around with this, we're going to prosecute. If you get caught, we're prosecuting.
She's
we're going
being
after
indicted,
you.
Right?
Yeah, and that's a really big deal. When she was approached about this, she resigned, and the grand jury, transpired, but it was, there was other people involved in this alleged
four co-conspirators, right?
Four co-conspirators, yes.
And were they all employees or no?
No, she was the only employee.
She's the only employee. Yeah, Ginger Hook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the...
no Marianne then.
No, and the press release... No, Gilligan's Island, is it?
Yes.
I got the reference, yes. The press release on Monday morning, which I'll be issuing, is I don't want to issue it on a Friday. It's, it's just kind of goes into the abyss if you do it on a Friday. So I'll issue it on Monday and you guys will get it. But I'm talking about it first here with you, because you asked me about this months ago.
Yes.
And I said, I can't talk about it right now. And you didn't push the issue.
No.
And because you didn't,
I had the story, but
yeah,
I knew it was come out eventually.
Yeah. But because you were cool about it, that's why I'm giving you the first on this.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I do.
So,
It's always sad to see something like this. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty, but it's a hell of a way to throw your life away.
Yeah, and this is, if convicted, her life's going to be upside down. I mean, it was just greed. That's, it's greed. You know, there's no excuse to this. You're putting other inmates' lives at risk, because the drugs lead to bullying and, violence inside the jail.
Yep.
You're putting other officers.
Sure.
Health and safety at risk as well. So this is just as pure stupidity. So, but like we said, everybody is presumed innocent until proven guilty in a court of law.
And as you said, by making it public, you hope there's a deterrent effect to this.
You know, we hope, but the thing is that certainty of punishment is much more important than the severity of punishment or the speed at which you get punished.
Okay.
Because if you think you're going to get away with it, it doesn't matter how bad the punishment is.
Right.
Some states that have the death penalty actually have a higher murder rate than the states that don't have it, because the people that are doing the murders, they don't think they're going to get caught.
Right.
You know, and if they do get caught, they think they're going to probably get off, there's not going to be enough evidence against them. So this certainty of punishment is much more important than severity. So I guess from that point of view, we hope this is going to be a deterrent, because we have a very effective special investigations unit. I've increased the number of employees in the special investigation unit. Internal affairs is also, we've tightened that up a lot over the last 3 years. And so it's like, we're looking at this. We're really trying to make a difference on this. And it appears that we are.
We have Sheriff Paul Haru here. If you'd like to ask him a question, you can. It's 508-996-0500. New legislation sponsored by Adam Scanlon, limiting the no-cost communications for the inmates. a minimum of 15 minutes, a maximum of 60 minutes a day, 1 hour a day on the phone for free. Talk about that, Sheriff.
Yeah, so this is, you know, we have the no-cost communication, and I support the idea of helping inmates be able to communicate with their families on the outside, mm-hmm. but not unlimited. The way the law is written, the law says that whatever practices and policies you have in place as of July 1st, 2023, you cannot be more restrictive after July 1st. The law was passed, and you know it was. I kept everything in place that Tom Hodgson had, you know, concerning the phone calls. And under Tom Hodgson, what Tom was doing made sense on this issue. Because what he did was he had a very permissive phone policy. And the reason it was permissive is because there was sort of a the jail got paid. They got a commission on all the phone calls.
Yeah.
So the more time inmates can talk, the more the commission could be.
Right.
And that's money that the jail could then put into programs and
right.
stuff like that. So what he was doing on that issue made sense. But once the law changed, it was the complete opposite of making sense. We couldn't make it more restrictive. The law said you couldn't make it. And this didn't, the law passed and then it later... You know, it took effect, I think, December 1st. It took a while before this even be implemented, even though the law passed, you know, effective. And it was, I just got in there and there was, you know, nobody reached out to at least my office. I don't know if they reached out to any of the other sheriff's offices, but the legislature just said, hey, we have to keep inmates in contact with their families. And, you know, one way to do that is to be free. So what this bill, and I the expense on our jail is about $2 million a year. We used to make about $100,000. Now we're losing about $2 million. The monthly phone bill is something like $150,000-$160,000 a month. So what we are, Adam Scanlon, he's a state rep from North Attleboro. Mm-hmm. Adam, is concerned about this issue. And, you know, he comes from a kind of conservative district. So he said, hey, what can we do about this? And I said, well, here's an idea. Have a floor and have a ceiling, and then have discretion in between. We set the floor at 15 minutes. That way a sheriff, you know, can't say, well, I don't think anybody should get any free phone calls. That way, you know, you the floor keeps the supporters of this mm-hmm. happy. The ceiling keeps the opponents happy, because if a sheriff were to say, well, I think they should talk as much as they want.
Right.
The ceiling says you can't. The ceiling says there's a cap on it. So the ceiling and the floor, you know, are like something for the opponents and the supporters. And then in between, we say the sheriff should be allowed to have whatever's right for their jail. And it doesn't have to be 15 minutes, or it doesn't have to be an hour for the ceiling and the floor and the ceiling.
Okay.
I just put that in there to illustrate that here's a cap and here's a floor. We can leave it to the state legislature to decide whether 15 minutes is right, or 20 minutes, or half hour is the floor, or maybe 5 minutes. We can let them figure out what they think is the right, what they want to fund, but at least have some guardrails around this. And, you know, when this first passed, I was on WBSM. It was probably your program. It was probably with you and Marcus.
Yep.
What I had said was, on the flip side, if it becomes, like I said, I support this, you know, the law. I said, but on the flip side, I'm quoting from the WBSM article, if it becomes unlimited, we're going to burn through that $20 million really quickly.
Yeah, because so that's what the governor was in the budget, was $20 million, right?
Yeah, that was at the time. So, you know, if it becomes unlimited, we're going to go through that really quickly. So what I'm not saying is then we'll make it, you know, give more than $20 million. I'm focusing on the fact that if it's unlimited, that's a problem. So
right.
have some parameters. I didn't say I could put a cap on at the time, but that's kind of what that's my implication was. You know, so that's something though that it's like I've said for a long time, unlimited is unreasonable. Mm-hmm. And even when I was first asked about this, I said, hey, if this is unlimited, we're going to go through that $20 million really fast.
Right.
In other words, don't make it unlimited. I'm not saying go ahead and give more than $20 million. That's not what I'm getting at.
So how are your supporters reacting to this? Because that was a major part of your supporters supporting you, I thought, was the unlimited phone calls, right?
Yeah, so
they're going to be angry with you.
Well, everybody's angry with me. So you have people on who didn't support me saying, well, you said, you know, you were like unlimited is okay. I never said unlimited was okay. Even WBSM article, I called attention to that. But then some of the supporters, they say, well, no, I totally disagree with what you're doing. I disapprove of what you're doing, filing this legislation. But what I ask the advocates of this unlimited calls is, you find, you don't like having parameters on this? Fine. You tell me why it needs to be unlimited.
Right.
You tell me. And I've not yet gotten a good explanation why it needs to be unlimited. And under this bill, what we're Adam also proposed, you know, if there are parameters and there's a ceiling, let's just say the ceiling is 45 minutes or 1 hour, whatever it is.
Right.
If you want to talk beyond that, you can talk beyond that. Just do it the way you used to do it. You pay for it yourself, you
right.
or your family.
Right.
So you can still talk beyond that, the max of what the state's going to pay for. But I'm repeating myself. Give me a reason why it needs to be unlimited. I have not heard a compelling reason. I don't even know if I've heard any. And one person said, well, some of these have people have five kids. And it's like, okay, but why does it need to be unlimited? Maybe each kid you get 10 minutes a day.
Right.
I'm just making that up right
sure.
now. You know, I'm just making something up to illustrate. You know, you can be reasonable. Maybe it's 20 minutes. I don't know. Let the legislature decide that. There's 200 of them up there, 40 senators, 160 reps. Let them fight that out and decide what they want to pay for. But that's where we're coming from, is we're trying to rein in on the costs. And, you know, I do support helping inmates keep in contact with their families, but I've never thought, like, unlimited's been a good idea.
We have the sheriff of Bristol County, Paul Haru, here in the studio. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be right back. Stick around.
This portion of programming on WBSM is brought to you by Dee's Hot Dogs in New Bedford, where you can get two hot dogs, soda, and a bag of chips for only $5.
South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. Weekdays on 1420 AM and 99.5 FM.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Chris McCarthy. You got a junk car? Well, don't waste time calling around. Make it easy for yourself and get paid top dollar. Call Mid-City Scrap in Westport and get top dollar for your junk car. Guaranteed. With honest weights, fair prices, and towing services available, Mid-City Scrap is the only call to make. No stress, no hidden fees, just cash in your pocket. Fast. With over 50 years of trusted service all across Bristol County, Mid-City Scrap in Westport has turned cars, buses, trucks, even tractors into real money for thousands of people just like you. So call Mid-City Scrap today. They're located on State Road in Westport. Go to the website, midcityscrap.com. Speaking of... Well, we have the sheriff of Bristol County. Speaking of Westport, Sheriff, you have a Westport selectman locked up over there, Manny Soares, frequent caller to the program. Well, he was a frequent caller yeah. to the program. What happened to my friend Manny Soares? How come he can't call here anymore?
Well, the BCSO has had a long-standing policy. You know, it was under my predecessor. It's the same policy under me, that inmates are not allowed to call into the radio live. It's a security issue. It's a little bit of a security risk. So we, you know, that's always been a policy. And so what we did is we just started, we found a way to enforce it. In fact, we didn't know this was going on. And so we basically just blocked the, like, not just your station, but all the stations. On the flip side, though, if somebody were to send an email
okay.
to like a radio station or, you know, Channel 10, Channel 12.
Right.
This happened recently. Somebody, like an inmate, sent like a really scathing email to like a couple of radio, news stations,
okay.
like, you know, being critical of the food and being critical of this and that, and but you know the temperature of the place.
Manny complained about the temperature too. Yeah,
he might have been the one that did this. So it might have been him that did this, but he you know whoever it was sent something to the local news, and Special Investigation Unit flagged it for me. And they said, "Hey, Paul, do you want to let this go?" And my instinct was, I think if we were to not let it go through, that would be a violation of his First Amendment.
Yes.
I checked with legal. They said, yes, you're right, Paul, that your instinct is right. That would be a violation. So I said, sure, he's complaining about the jail. Go ahead, email the news station. That's, you know, but it's a, because it's not in real time, it's not live, that's, it's a different issue.
Right.
It's a different security risk. So
what about my First Amendment rights? that you're violating to talk with the inmates.
You can still
here on the open line.
Well, it's on. You can still talk with them, but I don't think there's I don't know if there's a First Amendment right to talk to them in real time. I don't know.
Can
if there
we test
is.
That? Let's test that.
I think you'd have to sue us.
I would
and
have
let
to.
It go to the SJC, the Supreme Judicial Court. You know, I think eventually that's where it would land. Yeah. So when people say, "I'm going to sue you," that's fine. Go ahead. That's you. You have a right to sue.
I didn't say that. No, okay. I did
yeah,
not say that.
You're just messing around. Yeah.
But I miss Manny's phone calls.
Yeah.
And now his mom has to call me instead of Manny.
Yeah.
Because you blocked
all phone numbers. We didn't block him. We blocked anybody calling any live radio stations. Yeah. And that, again, is a longstanding policy that we just found a way to actually enforce.
Yeah. I'm going to miss Manny, but hopefully you guys are treating him good over there.
You guys can go for pizza when he gets out.
It's not the same. You have a canine toy drive.
Yes.
You're getting dog toys?
No, this is a canine toy drive is something that's been going on for a number of years. And the canine unit, they collect toys it's kind of like a Toys for Tots type program.
Yeah.
And people can bring toys and gifts to the canine unit located at the jail in Dartmouth at 400 Fonts Corner Road. They can bring them to the training academy, which is where the canine unit's office is. It's in the training academy, and they can donate things. And then all those toys are brought to different organizations to distribute to kids. And they do quite well. They bring in thousands and thousands of dollars worth of toys for kids. This year might be more important than ever, just because parents, with the lack of SNAP benefits
right.
at the moment, if that's still going on in December when parents have to choose between buying gifts and buying food, they're probably going to have to buy food.
I'm glad you brought that up, Sheriff, because you're always in the conversation, whether you want to be or not, about being a federally elected official. What are your thoughts on what's happening down in Washington with the SNAP benefits?
That, a judge just said that the Trump administration has to release the SNAP benefits.
Right.
There was a trust fund for like a reserve amount of money. And I think the Trump administration is now contesting that.
Yeah.
I think that the Impoundment Act, which is a law, it's a federal law, is pretty clear about this. If the Congress, who has control of the purse, are going to appropriate money for something, it's not up to the president whether or not that money gets spent or not. The law says the money has to get spent. It's the same law we have here in Massachusetts. And it's the same thing when I was mayor in Attleboro. So it's whether you're city, state, federal level, it's the same thing. The governor can try to veto the spending of something
right.
here in Massachusetts. And the governor often tries to do that, but then the state legislature overrides those vetoes. And then that money has to get spent because the legislature has power of the purse. The executive branch then is just required to administer that because that's their job. They have to follow the laws. The executive has to follow. We can't say, okay, I'm not going to follow this law. I'm going to follow that one. I'm going to put this one aside. I'll follow half of this law over there. It doesn't work like that. The executive branch still has to put their, right. they're tasked with carrying out the administration of government. So that's, I look at it in those very black and white terms, kind of very boring terms. I try not to think in terms of like the Democrats are doing this and the Republicans are doing that. And oh my God, it's just all hell's breaking loose. I just say, what are the current laws? And if you don't like the law, then change the law.
Right. Right. So, do you think there'll be a compromise?
I don't know. I don't think anybody knows right now.
Right.
Compromise is not a bad thing. Compromise.
I agree.
It's not. That's how we got to the drafting of the Constitution.
Right.
Without that.
All legislative bodies ultimately come to compromise.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, so if you don't compromise and you just have one party steamrolling everything, that's what they do in North Korea. That's what Saddam used to do. It's just like, okay, one side gets to say, let's do all
people
this.
People don't realize he vacations in North Korea, so he knows what he speaks.
Did it once.
You don't go back?
I don't need to go back. I don't like to go back to the same country more than once. I digress for
Why
a moment.
Why is that?
Been there, done that. There's plenty of countries out there, 192 UN countries.
Been there, done that, and got away with it. I'm out of the
yes.
country, right.
Well, fool around and you find out, and that's putting it mildly.
Yes.
Don't talk about democracy when you're in North Korea. Don't talk about religion. Don't talk about the regime. Don't talk about regime change. Just go and look at the things.
And don't steal posters.
Don't steal. You know where you are. And that's what happens is with these people who get detained, like in North Korea, often, mess around like that. And you know where you are. Don't mess around.
You know, plumbing emergencies, they don't wait, and neither should you. At Bass Ready Rooter, we treat every call like it's our own home. Our family-owned business has been solving sewer and septic problems since 1974. That's Gerald Ford's time. Earning the trust of thousands of families. You can understand how much that trust works with over 700 five-star reviews. We believe customer service is a lost art, and we're here to keep it alive. Bass Ready Rooter. We may not be your first call, but we'll always be your last. Visit bassready.com today, or write it down, bassready.com. Sheriff, the CDL program, talk about that.
So the CDL program has drastically changed from when Tom was sheriff. When I got there at the jail, there was a CDL simulator, and we don't use that anymore. We haven't used it over a year. But the idea to have a CDL program was a good idea, except there was no implementation. So inmates, maybe half a dozen inmates would participate in, you know, sitting on the CDL simulator. And if you've ever been to like Dave and Buster's, you know how you got those big video games you drive? Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. That's what the CDL simulator was, a big, huge video game. And inmates would participate, and this is before I got there. They would participate in the CDL simulator. They'd go and sit on it, and they'd, you know, and then after,
and when they'd call my program. And
they
talk
call
on
your
the
program,
air.
Talk about it. Yeah,
yeah, but you banned that. Go ahead.
Feelings are hurt. So we basically said, okay, that's a good idea to get a CDL. You know, I'm a former mayor. CDLs were in high demand for DPW or for waste management. So he said, okay, how can we make this an actual, a real program, not just go and sit on this big video game and then go back to your cell and get discharged? So I tasked Jody Hockert-Lotz, who's our chief of inmate services, I tasked her with making this into a real program. And I said, I want the inmates to, this is what I want. And I said, you figure out how to do it. I don't need to micromanage them. You can figure this out. And she did. I want to make sure that inmates have a CDL in hand before they're released. And so there's a lot of things we had to go through to make that happen. We had to get them CDL training, get them a permit, get them a road test. And so all those, we had to work with the registry.
Get them comfortable with having a chimpanzee in the cab of the truck.
What movie was that, TV show?
BJ and the Bear.
BJ, was that movie or TV show?
TV show.
TV show, okay. A little bit before my time.
Yes.
But you've mentioned
just right there. It was like right before your time.
Yeah, 76, born in 76.
Yes.
So the CDL program, though, is now a real program. We've graduated 4 people from the program. And not only do we graduate them, we also line them up with a job before they graduate. The vast majority of people support this. Based on the Facebook comments, the vast majority of people are saying, this is great. This is real rehabilitation. And by the way, I'm under no illusion that all 4 people are going to be successful. I would expect 1, maybe even 2 of them to be reincarcerated. I don't have any like knowledge about any individual per se.
Right.
But there's no.
But you are selling squares like a football game. You, in other words, this guy's going back to jail. Definitely. How much does a square cost?
A square, I don't even know.
You know, like a football pool?
No. I don't know what season it is. I don't follow sports. My brain only has so much bandwidth.
All right. I'm sorry for interrupting.
I know it's football.
So you're
season.
Saying 50% of guys are coming back to jail.
You know, even with a good program like this where we get them a good paying job.
Right.
Relapse is part of recovery, as the saying goes. And so, you know, if one of these 4 people, and we're going to have more graduates as time goes on, when somebody comes back into the jail, I don't want people to stop and think, well, obviously the program doesn't work because this guy came back. What you look at is how many fewer people come back to the jail as a result of the program. And we know programs do reduce recidivism, especially an effective one like this where you get a marketable skill that pays you a good job and pays a good wage. You get a good job with it, and then you know, you can actually get a job. But like what I'm getting at though is I'm under no illusion that it's a magic bullet. It's a silver bullet that's going to end recidivism. That's not what's going on here. It's going to fewer people will come back because of this. And it's only 4 people right now, but more and more people participate. And not everybody is eligible for it either.
And you know what's a good thing about it not being a magic bullet? The last magic bullet was used to kill the president. So we're glad that it is not, in fact, a magic bullet. We're going to take a break and we'll be back. With the sheriff from Bristol County, Paul Haru. Stick around.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-05.
We're going to let it all hang down. some action. We gon' get some satisfaction. We gon' find out what it is all about.
What it is all about. What it is all about.
Whoa. After midnight, we gon' let it all hang down.
Welcome back to the program. It's almost afternoon time, but not quite, not quite. And then stick around, of course, for Barry Richard. We have Paul Haruya, the sheriff of Bristol County. Sheriff, you've been doing some work with the Whaling Museum here in New Bedford.
Well, I want to give credit where credit's due. That was Owen Bebo, who's the chief of staff.
Owen Bebo, people know him from the Tolkien books.
It's that same name.
Owen Bebo. He's a hobbit. Right?
Hobbit. Was it Owen the first name? Owen?
No.
It was Bilbo. Yes. Bilbo, yes. So Hadley's correct. And Owen was responsible for this, and Hadley, my administrative assistant.
He's sitting right here with us.
Yep. And so what we had was all over the jail campus and, you know, Ash Street, we had a lot of old artifacts, historical artifacts, stuff going back, like, Lizzie Borden's, like, a mitimus, you know, which is the paperwork, you know, for her. We had old photos, and all this stuff was just sitting in the jail, not being seen by anybody.
You got any Joe Barbosa stuff over there?
Not that I know of, but
he was the first guy to ever go into the witness protection program. Yeah. They made it for him.
Yeah. We basically
New Bedford guy.
Yeah, we turned over all of the stuff that we had that was like really historic. We're talking decades and decades old, 70, 80, 100 years old. Stuff in the 1700s, stuff in the 1800s. We gave that to the Whaling Museum as a loan, and they created an exhibit for us. And that is, you know, people can go into the Whaling Museum and see some of this old stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah, but it's nice to get some of this old stuff out. And in the process of that conversation, I'd like to close Ash Street. I really would like to. We even talked about whether or not we can, if this would be probably a little bit expensive, but maybe even disassemble one of the old cells and then reassemble it in the Whaling Museum so mm-hmm. people can see the old, what it used to look like, you know. And so that would be a nice historical thing to keep.
What did Owen Bebo leave a ring maybe at the at the Whaling Museum? Is there a ring there?
I don't know, but you know, I'll have to ask him if he knows. Yeah. He might have kept it. Might have been precious to him.
See, he knows. He's playing.
It might have been precious to him. He might be kept the ring for himself.
That's the problem. That's the problem. So, that's really cool. That's going on right now?
Yeah. Yeah. How long do they have that on?
2026, the end of 2026.
Okay, the end of 2026 is when it's no longer going to be a standalone exhibit, but who knows what they'll do with it at that point. Give it back to us, put it in storage. But there's also a lot of records we gave them.
Yeah, so I see a logbook from the 1780s.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, I mean, actually, you know, if I can turn it over to Hadley, she probably knows more about it than I do.
Hadley, let's see if we can do that microphone.
I can just use this one. Does this one work?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a ton of stuff. I mean, my personal favorite was the book from the 1780s when it was in Taunton. It was the Taunton Jail, G-A-O-L, and it was just a debtor's jail. So
really?
It was just people that hadn't paid their debts yet, and they had to pay it in order to get out of jail. So that logbook is in there on display. And everything that's not on display, because we gave them tons and tons of stuff, is all available on the online archive to anybody who wants to see it.
At the Whaling Museum.
At the Whaling Museum on
online.
Their website. Yep. And then if you're a researcher or historian, you can also go to the Whaling Museum during their reading hours, and you can request to actually see the documents in person and analyze them or do any research like that too. So it's all available either online, in person, if you're a researcher, and it'll be there until the end of 2026.
That's great.
I'm going to put Hadley on the spot again, because actually I gave Hadley a project to do, and it's on our website now, and that's create like a bio page for all of the previous sheriffs. And so I have one. Tom Hodgson has one. So Hadley, if you want to tell people what's on that as well and where to find it, because then there's a lot of like historical information on the BCSO website that wasn't previously there. Some of it was, but now it's a lot more rich.
Yeah, that one was a tougher one. So I spent a lot of time going through genealogical records to find information on as many sheriffs as we could. Because the Ash Street Jail is the oldest continuously operating jail in the country.
Right.
It opened in the 1800s, but the Taunton Jail was in the 1700s. There were sheriffs going all the way back to there. So I was able to find some of their death certificates and where they were buried. So
people
can still go to their cemeteries. Some of the things and the projects that they worked on. There was some information on the sheriff from when Lizzie Borden the trial was going on, and that, like the sheriff said, the Mitimus is on display at the Whaling Museum right now. So that is all under, I think it's under the info tab, and then you click through to get to the history, and you can read about the BCSO itself and then go through many different sheriffs back a couple hundred years.
Really?
There was one sheriff that bounced around between different elected positions. Some went on to go be House reps in the United States Congress. All sorts of different career paths for different sheriffs. So it's really interesting. If anyone's got any more information that I don't have on the website, you can email it to me.
Hadley, how do they email you?
My email information is on the contact page. It's just my first last name. And I would be so happy if more people could send stuff in if they have any records.
Sure.
There's probably a lot missing.
Yeah. Sure, if that's great stuff. We're going to take a break and then we'll be back.
Yeah, I want to talk more about that because we have more to tell.
Yeah, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. Back to the program. It's Friday. Hope you have a great weekend. I know I'm going to. We have the sheriff of Bristol County, Paul Haru, here. Sheriff, I really appreciate you coming in, even if it wasn't on Halloween.
No, that's quite right. I appreciate you having me on.
What'd you go for Halloween? No, you didn't.
No, I just gave out candy at my home to the two groups of kids that stopped
by. You don't dress up?
No.
You don't dress up like an inmate?
No. When I was mayor, I used to joke that I'll wear a suit to work one day and actually look like a mayor, because I used to just wear a pair of jeans and like a white button-up shirt when I was mayor.
If people want to work for you, there's an academy starting.
Yep, just go to the website, BCSO website, go to the employment page, and then submit your information, and someone named Sam Raposo will be reaching out to you.
Sam's a good guy. He started there at a very young age. Mm-hmm. And really made a great career about it. He really really likes it.
Yeah, and do you know his father was a judge?
I do. Yeah. I know his father.
Yeah.
He's probably listening right now.
Very well, maybe.
Yes.
We speak well of him, so.
No, he's a great, great judge. He just was the chairman of the commission that selected the chief of police, mm-hmm. to screen the chief of police candidates for the city of New Bedford.
How's that going anyway?
He's the new chief?
Yeah. The new chief, but I know there's a dispute of whether or not he was like properly appointed.
Yeah, I think that, the mayor has the power to appoint.
Yeah.
And now he just submitted the name to the city council. I never thought the city council had any role in it, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Well, in Attleboro, every city is different. There's different charters. But in Attleboro, you have to still get confirmation by the city council. So the mayor appoints, the council confirms. But then I was in a situation once where I appointed somebody. The council did not confirm the person. But what I did was I said, okay, fine, we're just going to put you on as acting. And she just stayed on as acting the whole time.
Right.
And so it was a little loophole to that.